even just like, you know, get a drink and then sort of like, work on it. Yeah, we'll get the bowl of the water and
okay.
Yeah,
nice day. I thought it'd be a lot colder.
Yeah, I thought it was only going to be the 20s.
And when you said that, I'm like, oh no. Then I looked and I'm like, what's he talking about? On the app thing?
Yeah, so
quiet. Alright, sorry, quiet on set. I'll be healthy.
This is healthy.
I don't know. I like to get a big one, so it's just the best bang for the buck, you know?
Is it?
Yeah. Can you stop talking in my dealer?
So my forte.
Can we get a microphone?
Sure.
You have to sign that?
Yeah, you have to sign it.
If you do a whole nother sheet. If you guys watch, you have plenty of opportunity. Don't stick any parts of your body in the water for any reason at any time. Should be pretty straightforward.
If you drop anything in the water and we like drop the net in the water, your hat, something, we need to pick it up. Make sure to ask Angela if the juice is off before we go for it.
If we get up into like some woody areas and you get your net caught on a tree limb or a branch or something, like don't, like, you can just drop the net. Like, yeah, you can try to get it off, but if it's really stuck in there, I've actually snapped a net myself trying too hard. So I'd rather not snap nets and just go back and pick it up. The black handle ones do float, so.
Biggest thing is try not to knock my teeth out with the end of the pole up there. That's probably the most dangerous thing.
Which is also why you will be back here. But yeah, other than that, Jason, you want to open the tank up? We'll get some water in there, and we're pretty much ready to go.
That's 25 feet of water out here in the main channel. Hey Jason, you get a start time down?
Yep.
All right, you guys ready to go?
Yep.
Okay, you're going on. You're on. Start off in the lower end here, deeper water, typically a little bit slower of catch, and as we work our way up we'll probably see more and more fish. And probably well-educated anglers alike will always point to small diameter rock, gravel with water flow either in a river or a windswept shoreline with good wave action to keep the eggs free of sediment as well as provide aeration for development. The water quality parameters there to keep the eggs free of sediment and well oxygenated is the same for the Winnebago system walleye. However, they spawn on a different substrate being marsh grass, so how that works is you typically have a upper end of the marsh and a lower end of the marsh. The marsh will basically have a directional flow going through it, overtopping at the top end, and then the marsh grass will get pushed back in the current, kind of creating a mat, and that's where the fish will lay their eggs. It's a kind of unique to the Winnebago system, and I would say the Winnebago system is probably the largest marsh spawning walleye strain probably that's even out there. The pike just jumped right there. Probably a good 30-incher. Yeah, right now the new London River gauge is at right around 9.7. We've been out here doing this when that gauge is at 1.5, when all the marshes are completely dry and we're shocking the main channel of the river. So the hydrograph of the Wolf River can have some pretty impressive fluctuations. Zach able to get some experience netting the first time you guys went out, or?
No, we were just watching the whole time.
Did you have five people on the boat then, or?
Yeah.
Oh, I've been told it's a pretty strict four, but I guess
we're all three. Zach and another guy were following us on different boats.
Got it.
I was on the shotgun.
I mean, you could probably fit five people in here. It's just typical protocol.
Well, it was already crowded with four, yeah.
Yeah, especially you got a camera.
Safety switches.
Yeah. Have you guys covered the sturgeon spearing?
No, we've just really been focusing on walleye, like all things walleye for a year.
Have you seen, I'm pretty sure it was a PBS documentary, The Frozen Chosen?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's basically out of our office.
Oh, cool.
Most of the coverage, Kendall Campy and Ron Brook.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, what really gets fish in these marshes is the river will have much more thermal resistance. It'll have much more volume because it's a lot deeper. So when the water overtops the bank on the upper end and flows through the marsh, it's much shallower. It's typically a dark bottom, so if it's a sunny day, the sun will hit that dark bottom and warm the water up. So then when the water travels through the marsh and exits at its downstream location, it will basically create a temperature gradient where it's meeting the river, and that's what's going to bring those fish into the marsh to want to go up there and spawn. That being said, when we have a warm-up and then things cool down really quickly, you'll actually start to see warmer temperatures in the river comparatively to the marshes, and that kind of shuts things down until it warms back up. The male fish will basically start to show up on the marshes as soon as the ice breaks up. And then the females, you'll start to find a couple hanging around in the lower portions of the marsh around 38 to 40 degrees. And then things really start going crazy when you get to that 42 to 44 degree mark, and then go well into when it's even upwards of that. low, the spawning marshes will not have any water in them. So high water that we have right now is excellent. This is actually one of the highest I've seen it in my 5 seasons of doing this. But that being said, what you really need is the water to maintain its high level status. One of the worst things that can happen for a walleye spawn is for the water to come up really fast. All the fish will enter the upper ends of the marshes, they'll lay all their eggs, and then if the water rapidly drops after that, all of those eggs are left high and dry. So what you really want for a successful walleye spawn on the system here is high, consistent water. And you also like to see a relatively stable climb in water temperatures without massive fluctuations. Some years when we've observed really rapid warm-up followed by a long duration of colder temperatures, we have seen that cause some disarray in the success of any given year class we observe. And if you guys also have that story on the trawl you did, the amount of those little guys that we catch basically tells us how well the fish did up here any given spring. Not sure if you guys or what kind of marsh visits you had with walleyes for tomorrow, but at the upper end of this marsh there's a project type. It's pretty common for the spawning marshes that we call it marshes, as there's been a long history of roads being built. There's a big railroad going through one, private landowners making roads and trails, so kind of just restoring that is the intention there.
Get
your
people.
The
what? We've worked with them quite a bit. They're
good
people.
Yeah, they're great. They're well funded. They usually have the financial backing to, you know, do all of the cool extracurricular stuff that we want to do. Like some of those movement studies that we've done, like there's no way we'd be able to afford that just on the state budget without groups like Walleyes for Tomorrow and many others on the system. In the fall of 2021, we tagged 74 adult walleye in Lake Winnebago proper. So tagging them in the fall in the lake, basically, you know, indicating that those are true Winnebago resident fish. And then we were looking at there. One of the primary purposes of that was to see the proportions of fish that ran up the Wolf River, the Fox River, or stayed in the lake to spawn. And from that study, we saw 91% of fish run up the Wolf River. So the Wolf River is most definitely the most prolific, productive spawning area for the Winnebago system walleye. The Winnebago system walleye population and its general success really does pay respect to the amount of spawning habitat and the quality of spawning habitat that we have up here on the Wolf. It's about 100 miles from Lake Poygan up to the Shawano Dam of undammed river. So a lot of connected floodplain and wetland between here and there, providing a lot of areas for fish to spawn successfully. There's some marshes that will operate at certain water levels and other marshes that require other ones. So, you know, we have our low water area marshes that we'll target and our high water area marshes that we target. But this one right here that we're in, it's kind of the New London area complex. We have Bernegger's, Wolf Rafts, Leslie's, and Hortonville Flats. And this has been one of the most prolific spawning marshes on the system, documented all the way back to Gordon Friegel's work way back in the 1960s. The lower ends of the marshes are typically where the female fish will stage up before going into the, oh, that's a big pike, that's probably 35 plus. The females will stage down in the lower end before going up to the upper end of the marsh to actually drop their eggs and spawn. The upper ends are typically shallower. You'll see more of that marsh grass getting blown back and active current up there. And we typically like to focus our survey efforts down in the lower end to capture pre-spawn fish and then basically leave the upper ends alone, let the fish spawn. I think it's the deep water. We're in 6.5 feet right here. We're not even gonna see everything. Yeah, it's like when the water comes up on the wolf, anglers can also struggle. The fish just have so much more area to spread out. Also, it can just be a little bit more difficult to fish in the traditional ways a lot of the river fishermen do when flows are extremely high. We can also have struggles with our survey boat here in the marshes. If the water exceeds much over 5 feet, the electricity doesn't really penetrate down much further than that, so kind of have to go really slow and then maybe target some more shallow areas. But yeah, this is just like interesting to see, honestly. I mean, the last
I'm going to go down and spend all that time trying to do it. 2025, ain't it? Yeah, 40 sucks.
They're probably not going to set the nets today. It's down here, we're not getting anything. Like, until we got to that second finger, we really didn't see much. I think it's more so a factor of how deep it is down here. We got 7 feet in the back of the boat right now. I can see fish on graph too, but I'm just not touching them. Here as well. The Winnebago system is very shallow, so it doesn't have nearly as much thermal resistance as other inland bodies of water that, you know, might be 50, 60, 80 feet deep. Look at Green Lake, you know, it doesn't really freeze that well because of how deep it is and how much volume of water there is there. Lake Winnebago is 137,000 acres and it has a max depth of 21 feet, so we get really good solid ice. It's usually one of the first areas to get good solid ice. Lake Poygan is a pretty well-known hotspot for walleye fishing on the ice. That is the furthest upstream pool lake of the system. You got the Wolf River draining into Lake Poygan. Lake Poygan is highly connected to Lake Winneconne. The Wolf River then conjoins with the Fox River, meeting at the confluence where it enters Lake Butamore, and then both of those rivers exit Lake Butamore as the Fox River through Oshkosh before it enters Lake Winnebago. Hmm. stocking okay?
You can maybe turn it up just a little bit on the side here.
Zach, how you doing up there?
My success rate?
No, I was wondering if you were thinking about a career change yet, if you liked it or what.
Volunteer? It's
great. It's usually a pretty popular thing for our volunteers to enjoy. You could shock the entire shoreline of a, you know, average inland walleye lake and see a fraction of the amount of fish that we could capture here in, you know, under an hour on certain days. I wouldn't say today is necessarily an incredibly high catch day, but we'll probably handle a couple hundred fish by the end of the day. sun could stay out, that'd be nice. Catch and release. Do you guys specifically cover like outdoors stuff?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
That'd be cool though.
Politics suck.
Yep. Yeah, that's why I like.
We have a, if you work in fish management, or if you work for the DNR in general, you're like, oh, I wanted to work there because it's, you know, fish and wildlife, yeah. But you actually get into quite a bit of politics.
Oh yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
In all reality, the politics really are what, you know, support and fund our work, so it's very important. Jason, I think I'll have a pretty thorough effort up. But when you think about walleye spawning, you do not think about fish swimming around a flooded forest in most areas. Very unique. So if you get a shot of that right there, that is the Berniger bank cart. Right now when the water is so high, the water is going to flood the river regardless, because you know it's going to overtop the bank even where that bank cut does not exist. But in lower water years, that really helps to facilitate water getting into the marsh. It's actually really impressive how much water port it's doing, and then you can see it feeds directly into the marsh. And again, this is one of the most successful, most productive walleye spawning marshes on the entire system. You can see that little cut right through the woods there. So you could even drive the boat through there on a day like today. So yeah, that one really gets flowing around 6-7 feet, and right now we're approaching 10 feet, so. Got a little bit more rain in the forecast as well. In addition to providing aeration and keeping the eggs free of sediment and debris as they develop, the water flow through the marsh also back into the Wolf River and subsequently down into the pool lakes on the system, where the zooplankton hatches, which is their primary food source of larval fish, are much more abundant. The faster a larval fish can get a piece of zooplankton in front of its face, the more likely it is it's going to survive. That also plays into temperature. Temperature can be correlated to more or less productive zooplankton blooms. If you have a
15-0. Hole tag 213-668.
Good to go.
You're log fell off, I think.
What?
I'm gonna help him out. Oh, yeah. This is in by his right armpit.
Can I get this recap out of the way? Record fresh recaps this year. Unless you think they're from the same day. Obviously these aren't from the same day. Those are fish we probably tagged a couple days ago. You see how bright yellow the tag is still. But your very common Winnebago system walleye will look like. 15.6, and the hole tag number is 208-411. Yeah, that is a recap, right?
Yeah.
Male, 14.9. Male, 15.0. Male, 16.7. Male, 16.1. Male, 15.6. Female, green, 19.2. Got a bunch of girls in here. Another green girl, 17.2. Last tag on the rack, tag track 213-675. Solid sequence, right?
Correct.
Our boy, 18.9. Male, 18.4.
You're gonna take me out.
Male, 14.0. Male, 16.4. Female, green. Had a 28 incher yesterday. She was spawned out there, so it seemed a lot less impressive. 17-0. Was a male. 17-0. Tag check 8.5. Female green. 21.1.
Nice one.
Female green, 23.7. Female green, 22.6.
I'm gonna dunk him back in the water there.
Female green, 22.6. Tag check 9-1.
Yep.
Male, 13-9. Male, 18-2. Male, 18-9. Male, 15-3. Male, 14-6. Male, 17-6. Male, 15-1. Male, 16-7. Male, 16-9. Last tag on the rack. Next fish coming is a recap. You ready for a recap? Male, 15-1. Tag is 208-417. 417. Oh, gotcha. Male, 15-3. Hold tag, 213-702. Male, 15-6. Male, 16-1. Male, 13-6. Male, 15-5. Male, 16-7. Male, 14-4. Male, 13-9. Tag check, 09. Female, green, 19-2. Male, 15-7. Male, 14-2. Male, 15-3. Male, 19-0. Got a tag. Male, 15-1. Male, 16-3. Female, green, 17-2. Boy, 18-2. Female, green, 21-2. Male, 15-1. Male, 18-1. Male, 16-7. Male, 16-3. Male, 14-2. Male, 16-2. Last tag on the rack. Tag check, 213-725.
Yep. Oops.
Female green, 19-1.
I get a tag check on the next one.
Female green, 20.0. Tag check, 27.
Yep.
Boy, 15-1. Boy, 15-2. Boy, 15-8. Boy, 15-1. Boy, 15.5. Boy, 15.5. Boy, 14.7. Spent girl, 19.4. Tag check, 3.5. Male, 16.6. Male, 19.3. Male, 14.8. Male, 14.6. Male, 14.0. Male, 17.6. Male, 14.5. 15.1. Male, 14.0. 15.3. 16.1. Yeah, I'll get that. It's, call them cold water warts or lymphocystis. Male, 19. Do we need low 19s? It's way back. Back it. You need a small number of fish for an age sample. That was 19.4. Male, 14.4. Tag check, 4.8. Male, 15.4. Male, 14.4. Last tag on the rack. Tag check, 213.750. Male, 16.2. Hold tag, 213.751. Male, 13.9. Male, 16.5. Male, 14.8. Male, 18.4. Male, 16.6. Tag check, 56. Bean, 18.0. Hold tag, 213.757. Male, 15.4. Male, 15.4. Male, 13.7. Male, 18.4. Male, 14.9. Sixteen 16.2. Fifteen two, fifteen four, fifteen four, fifteen eight, thirteen six. Fifteen seven, fifteen three. Last tag on the rack. Tag check 213 75 775. Sorry.
That was okay.
We did sack one fish. Did that get you?
No, that was.
You ready?
Yep.
Male 14 5. Now 14-2, hole tag 213-777. Now 13-7.
Big girl.
Female green. Twenty-four three. Tag check 213-778.
What?
213-779, I'm sorry. I was like, I just tag checked you. 17-2, 8-9. Male 14-4. We need low 13s.
Nope.
Male 13-3. Little guy. Male 16-3. Male 13-8. Male 17-1. Male 15-6. 14-4. Tag check 9-6.15-9, 15-8, 14-6.
I'm surprised they can hide in there sometimes.
0. There's one more tag on the rack, right?
Yep.
All right, we'll do one more quick run just in the lower end here to try to pick off some girls, and then probably get back on the trailer and let you guys be on your way.
Well, I guess give me a sense of where we are, and I mean, it looks a little different than it might in some years, but what is this place?
Yeah, so it's April 6, 2026. The Wolf River walleye spawn is definitely underway. Got some warmer weather here coming up that will probably really get things to get going here. We're in the New London area marshes, or Hortonville area marshes, one of the many marsh complexes that are found along the Wolf River where the Winnebago system walleye come to spawn each spring.
mean, most people that know anything about walleye spawning know gravel base, rocky shores. So how does this fit in with walleye? Why do they do this here?
Yeah, so if you talk to biologists around the Midwest or even well-educated anglers, when you talk about walleye spawning, you're going to hear small diameter rock or even gravel either in a river or a windswept shoreline on a lake that provides good current to keep the eggs free of sediment as well as well aerated during the development process. And those two water quality parameters here on the Wolf River are the same. However, the substrate on which the walleye spawn is very different. So the Winnebago strain of walleye are actually a marsh spawning strain of walleye, likely the most successful marsh spawning strain of walleye anywhere in the world. The fish come all the way from Winnebago and the Pool Lakes, anywhere between 60 and maybe even pushing 100 miles on their journey upstream. So almost could be a 200-mile round trip journey for them. Basically what happens up here on the Wolf River as well as the Upper Fox River, the flooded wetlands adjacent to the Wolf River, we refer to them as walleye spawning marshes. The way that the water flows through them can be dynamic, with the water from the river overtopping the bank throughout several sections of the entire length of the marsh. But the general idea is that the water will enter at a upper end location and then travel in a directional fashion down through the marsh and exit at a lower end. So we typically always enter the marshes at the lower end, and that is also what the fish will typically do. The marshes are a lot shallower than the main channel of the river here, so they have a lot less thermal resistance. If you get a nice day, nice spring day, and the sun's coming down, the dark bottom of the marshes and the shallow water will heat up a lot faster. So as the water is making its way through the marsh, it'll actually heat up and then actually create a little bit of a temperature gradient at the lower end where it meets up with the river. The fish making their migration upriver will feel that and enter the marsh to go spawn.
So when we talk about walleye habitat, I mean, there's a lot of stories about climate change and lakeshore development, and this is pretty unique, and the amount of people over decades that have made sure that this habitat has not been drained or dredged or put into farmland, or it's still available for this.
Yeah, so in general, the Winnebago system is home to one of the Midwest premier walleye fisheries. That being said, it is 100% sustained through natural reproduction, and the success of that fishery really pays due to the amount and the quality of habitat up here on the Wolf River for spawning purposes. There are different things to happen up here, like there's different county highways that go across the floodplain that kind of create big dams and dikes. There's private landowners making trails and roads through their own property, and then there's another one a little bit south of here that has a big railroad going through it. And due to those kind of reasons, the disruption of that connectivity through those wetlands, that is typically viewed as bad for the water flow through those marshes. So groups like the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Walleyes for Tomorrow, Shadows on the Wolf, and many others that financially contribute will essentially conduct projects that promote the water flow through those marshes. A really common one is either the modification or removal of dams and dikes that may have been put in from maybe potential road projects or private landowners wanting to make their property more accessible. There's also culvert projects that, again, will either be put into a dam or a high point in a bank to help facilitate water flow. And then another common one are bank cuts. So in certain water level years, the water may not be high enough at the upper end of the marsh to actually overtop the bank and then get that marsh flowing. So one of the more successful projects we have out there is making a cut in the upper end of the marsh to allow water to flow through at lower water levels. Right now, here today, I believe the New London gauge is right around 9.7. That is above flood stage. We have very high water this year. So we actually did have a bank cut up there. I tried pointing out to you guys, but as of right now, the water is just totally overtopping the bank. So in a lower water year, when that's the only spot the water can get through there, you can really go out there and see the water gushing through that cut there, and then you can see it feed through the entire marsh, creating that desirable flow that we want.
When we talk about the full life cycle of walleye, they come up here to spawn, when the fry hatch, like, they're eventually going to float their way down, right?
Yep. So the fish, the eggs will develop over a period of 10 to 14 days on average. However, it can be prolonged from that if there's colder water temps. It's directly
related to water temps, the colder, the longer it will take. And then after the fish hatch out, they're dependent on that water flow going through that marsh to basically facilitate what we call larval drift. The fish will basically hatch out as swim up fry, very low ability to have any kind of locomotion. They can basically just flip their tail around and swim up into the current and get carried down. And then what they're trying to do there is let the current take them back into the Wolf River. That will eventually take them back into Lake Poygan, and the rest of the pool lakes where their zooplankton food source is much more abundant than up here on the Wolf River.
And when it comes to the tagging that you're doing, like, you've got that, the math figured out, like the number of people that turn that in to give you that population estimates, right?
Yep, so there's kind of three main purposes of the survey up here. One, we're up here checking out all the marsh conditions, getting ideas for potential future projects. So that's just kind of an overarching general thing we're doing the whole time. Another thing is just all of our basic biometric data. So we're taking lengths on fish, sex obviously, and then we do take a male age sample. That's a good way to look at how our year classes documented in the trawl survey actually get recruited to the adult spawning stock. And then lastly, we have our tagging effort. So we have a goal of 1,000 female fish every single year. We'll usually encounter somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 males along the way. The tagging on the system here has been done going back to 1993. So a very lengthy data set, and we basically use those numbers. We have the amount of fish we have tagged, the number of fish that are returned by anglers, and then we also factor in tag loss and angler tag reporting rate in order to get a an exploitation estimate on the system. So we did have a bag reduction on the system back in 2020. Went from a 5-daily bag to a 3-daily bag. And that exploitation estimate that we get there is basically the primary way that we're evaluating what that bag reduction does to harvest on the system.
And is the bag reduction more a result of poor reproduction or just a lot of the pressure that it gets?
The main motivation behind the bag reduction of 2020 was a further evaluation of angler tag reporting rates. We had previously estimated that 1 in 2, or you could say half of anglers that caught a tagged fish would actually return their tagged fish. We conducted a reward tag study and basically put a smaller number of tags out that are worth $100 if an angler returns it. It's actually the same exact thing Green Bay is doing. I think you guys covered that as well. But from that effort, we basically got a corrected tag reporting rate. You just compare the number of fish that are returned with the $100 rewards versus the non-reward every single year. And just using that ratio there, you can basically figure out how many people are actually returning their tags. And we found that to be only 1 in 3 people. So that dropped our tag reporting estimate down to 33%. From 50%, so basically making our exploitation estimates increase, resulting in the motivation for the bag change. We like to see harvest stay below 35% on the system, and ideally it would be below that. Below 20 would probably be better off, but seeing those very high exploitation values was the main reason for the bag reduction.
When you think about all of the things that go into making this a successful fishery, how important is it that you have so many volunteers, you have so many groups raising money, that people care, that it's not just how many can I catch, but that the whole system is thriving?
Yeah, there's a lot of passionate groups on the system. We have a larger group that the DNR puts together. It's called the Winnebago Fisheries Advisory Committee, and it has anywhere from 25 to probably closer to 30 now different fishing clubs and other organizations on the system. We all get together, we look at the data, what the population current status is at, and as of right now, we have had a pretty lucky streak of production on the system. That's what the system relies on. You know, we do have very high harvest, but that being said, we have very high exploitation. So if we have a low or lack of production on the system for a number of years, the amount of fish getting taken out isn't going down. So, you know, the combination of low production and high exploitation, that's the recipe for a crash. And again, as of now, going back to 2016, we've had almost nothing but average to above average year classes show up, with many notable near record year classes showing up in that time frame. So there hasn't been too much call to action on the walleye population as of right now, but you know, we're always in communication with all those different groups out there. Another big thing with the groups is they actually help us conduct the work. You know, the management crew that covers Winnebago System Walleye Management is a team of typically 3 people, so utilizing not only volunteers, we do have different DNR staff from different parts of the state help us out too, but those volunteers play a huge role.
Okay. I think that's all we need. Thank you.
Yeah.